Man was on top of the roof of his second-story home installing a satellite dish. It was a particularly windy day. And one misstep later, he found himself sliding down the angled roof and attaching himself to the gutters. And from the gutters, he yelled up to the heavens, "Please help me." And a voice answered, "Let go, and I'll catch you." And then the man replied, "Isn't there anything else you can do? I don't want to let go. I'm afraid." Submission is a very difficult concept. It's not a popular topic. And yet, if we'll walk with Jesus, what we'll see is that we must live a life that is submissive. In fact, Jesus repeatedly emphasized the concept of submission throughout his teaching ministry. As Parker just read for us from John chapter 8, verses 28 and 29, he says, "I don't do anything on my own. What I'm doing is in accordance with the will of the Father." Submission was such a vital part of Jesus' earthly walk that his ministry was characterized by that concept. The writer of Hebrews says in Hebrews 5, 7 and 8, "In the days of his flesh, Jesus offered up prayers and supplications with loud cries and tears to him who is able to save him from death, and he was heard because of his reverence. And although he was a son, he learned obedience." He learned obedience through what he suffered. If we will walk with Jesus, isn't that what we're exploring throughout this year together? If we'll walk with Jesus, then we must be willing to submit to God. But what does submission even mean? Webster defines it as to yield oneself to the authority or will of another, to permit oneself to be subjected to something, to be submissive, to be compliant. A man told a story about driving down a country road when he came to a little one-lane bridge. And as he approached the bridge, he noticed that there was a yield sign instructing him to make sure that there wasn't any traffic coming his direction to avoid a head-on collision. Well, he went his way, he yielded, there wasn't anyone coming, and so he went on down the road to his destination. And later that day, he was driving back, coming this time, obviously, the opposite direction. And as he approached that little one-lane bridge, this time from the opposite side, he noticed that on that side, too, there was a yield sign instructing him to ensure that no one was coming from the direction that he just that morning had been going. As he went down that bridge, he looked back in his rearview mirror to ensure that the yield sign was, in fact, posted on the opposite side as well. We had a yield sign on both sides, instructing motorists to ensure that there would not be a head-on collision from either direction. And maybe that's what Paul is getting at in Ephesians 5, verse 21. When Paul instructs us as Christians, notice this is to all of us, that we are to be submitting ourselves to one another out of reverence for Christ. So if we want to honor Christ, and if we want to be like Christ, then the way we're going to do that in part, at least according to Ephesians 5:21, is to be actively involved in yielding to each other to avoid these emotional, these interpersonal head-on collisions. That I'm willing to divest myself, to give up my own interests, to think about your interests, to consider what is best for you. And Jesus, well, his whole earthly ministry was characterized by that very thing. But submission is challenging. And I think it's challenging for two reasons. You can tell me what you think about this, but don't do it during the sermon. Wait till after we're done, okay? Number one, I think submission is hard because we don't really understand it. I think we've got all of these notions that submission is some antiquated concept, that it's stuck back in the 1940s, 50s, and 60s, that it looks like some housewife model. And because our culture is so averse to that, we think, nah, I don't want any part of that. Don't even talk about submission to me. We mistake it as some person being superior to another person, or the one who is submitting must make himself or herself inferior to the one to whom he or she submits. But make no mistake about it, when Jesus came to earth and repeatedly said that he submits to the will of his Father, Philippians 2 makes it clear that what he was doing was giving up, setting aside at least for a time, what previously existed as equality with God his Father. That Jesus himself said, I'm going to lay down my life and I can take it back up again. And yet in the very same notion, he was saying, by laying down my life, when I'm lifted up on the cross, you'll know that I'm submitting to the will of my Father, John 8, 28 and 29. I think it would be difficult to argue that Jesus, even though he's come in human form, is inferior in some way. I'm not willing to argue that. Now, make no mistake about it. When I'm submitting to God, that is an inferior submitting to a superior. But when we submit to one another, Ephesians 5:21, when a wife obeys the command of God, Ephesians 5:22 and 23, to submit to her own husband, when a husband loves his wife the way Christ loves the church. Didn't Christ give up his own will in sacrificial love for her? Is there not a degree of submission that's involved even in the relationship of the husband toward the wife? What I'm saying is submission does not necessitate a superior and an inferior. And part of the challenge that we have with submission is simply that we don't understand it. Sometimes we mistake it as somebody's robbing me of my individuality, of my talents, of my abilities, of my preferences, of my power. And yet consider who gave you the talents, the personality, the power to whatever degree that you have. Who made you with that stuff? You're made in the image and the likeness of God, Genesis 1, verses 26 and 27. We continue to be made in God's image, according to James chapter 3. And God didn't create you with these things just for you to be stripped of them in this context of interpersonal relationships that God himself demands. And yet it's God who tells us that love does not insist on its own way, 1 Corinthians 13, 4 and 5. It's God who commands us in love to serve one another, Galatians 5:13. And it is God through Peter's pen who says, as each has received a gift, use it to serve one another, 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 10. In other words, you were made for submission. Submission is not a demotion. Submission is a high calling. God created you for this. And lest anyone misunderstand me this morning, you understand this isn't a sermon just for wives, okay? Ephesians 5:21 says we're all to submit to each other. And if it's good enough for Jesus, I think it's good enough for me. See, the real issue with submission sometimes is that we just don't understand it. But I think more often than not, it's the second reason we just don't like it. I don't want to have to submit to you. I don't want to give up my preferences and yield to your preferences and the things that you want. I'd rather insist on my own way. After all, that's more fun. Submission is challenging. So this morning, as our time quickly passes, let's notice four things that submission requires. And in so doing, I think we will learn how we can adopt this beautiful Christ-like characteristic that is a necessity if we will walk with Jesus. Number one, submission requires that I have discernment to recognize my genuine need for what only God can provide. That makes sense, doesn't it? If I'm going to submit to God, that implies, as we talk about the relationship I have with the Father, that I have to recognize there are some things that only He can provide. Jesus, in John 8, 28 and 29, admittedly was not in exactly the same position that you and I are in as we navigate life. And yet, Jesus made himself not only subservient to the will of the Father, but also placed himself where he was in complete dependence on the care of the Father. When you have lifted up the Son of Man, you will know that I am he, that I do nothing on my own authority, but I speak just like the Father has taught me. And he who sent me is with me. He hasn't left me alone. I always do the things that are pleasing to him. Peter beseeches us in 1 Peter 5 to humble ourselves under the mighty hand of God so that at the proper time he may exalt you, casting all your cares or anxieties on him, because he cares for you. And we're going to have to trust him. We're going to have to discern that we need him if we're going to be sober and vigilant, watching out for that roaring lion, verse 8, who seeks anyone whom he may devour. Submission to God requires discernment to recognize that I have a genuine need for something that only God can provide. See, the opposite of that, I don't like submission. That's taking things into my own hands. That's me trying to fill the, stated respectfully, God-shaped hole in my life that only God can fill. In the second place, submission requires the humility to accept his authority, to realize that God's in charge and I'm not. And that can be very difficult. Jesus, again, in John chapter 5, serves as our perfect example. Really, we could read all of John chapter 5. Time doesn't permit us to do that. But in verse 19, Jesus says, "Truly, truly, I say to you, the Son can do nothing of his own accord, but only what he sees the Father doing. For whatever the Father does, that the Son does likewise." Dropping down to verse 30, Jesus says, "I can do nothing on my own. As I hear, I judge, and my judgment is just, because I seek not my own will, but the will of him who sent me." Is that my sentiment? As I'm trying to walk with Jesus, is that what I'm trying to do? I'm not here to do my own will. I'm not here for me. This isn't about me. More often than not, my actions are telling. I do make it about me. I do think this is all about what I want. But James has told us all along, "Submit yourselves, therefore, to God," James 4, verse 7. After quoting Proverbs 3:34, "Humble yourselves. God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Submit yourselves, therefore, to God. Resist the devil, and he'll flee from you." Submission will require the humility to accept God's authority. But number three, submission requires trust that acknowledges that his ways are best. I have to trust him. You know, it's one thing in the previous point we stated, you know, I've got to accept his authority. But then to come around and to really know that his ways are better than my ways. "Man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God," Matthew 4 and verse 4. So once again, the words of Jesus in John chapter 6, verse 38, "I have come down from heaven not to do my own will, but the will of him who sent me." The wise man has said all along in Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Don't lean on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will direct your paths." We get ourselves into so much trouble by trying to take matters into our own hands because we fail to acknowledge that God's ways are better than our ways are. And then number four, submission requires confession of self-centeredness and the willingness to forsake it. Ouch. Does that hurt you like it hurts me? Confession of self-centeredness and a willingness to forsake it. Jesus says, "Whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it." I don't know what you think of when you hear that, whoever would save his life. I think about somebody who's just trying to hoard everything up. I mean, and they end up almost like a cartoon character or something where they've got so much that they're just bearing under the weight of all of this stuff that they have. They're trying to preserve themselves, and it just doesn't work. But whoever is willing to give it all up, Jesus here isn't talking necessarily literally. He's not saying you have to be willing to give up all of your physical possessions, but he's saying, I'm willing to put all these things into God's hands. I'm willing to say all that I have and all that I am is yours. Whoever's willing to give up his life for me will actually, in so doing, preserve his life. That is to say, he's storing up, as Jesus puts it in Matthew chapter 6, treasures in heaven. So Paul tells the church at Philippi, do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit. Conceit. Hollow opinion. It's all about me. Don't do anything out of that, but in humility, count others more significant than yourselves. Do I do that? Like, is that the way I'm really living? Let each of you look not only to his own interests, but also to the interests of others. Our main focus this year is, yes, on walking with Jesus, but with a purpose. See, we're springboarding from Mark 1, verse 17, where Jesus says, if you follow me, I'll make you a fisher of men. So, yes, we need to be submissive in every aspect of our lives. And we need to be willing to submit, certainly to God, but also to one another, in the sense that I'm yielding my own desires and will to focus on you and help you. And you're doing the same to focus on me and help me. And we're able to really relate to each other as a family. It's almost like sharing life and changing lives. Have you heard that somewhere before? So we've got that going for us, and that's how we do that. But when over here in Mark 1, Jesus says, if you follow me, if you'll follow me around and do what I do and become my disciple, then here's what I'm going to make you become: a fisher of men, a good news spreader, somebody who's going out and sharing the message of Jesus with others, somebody who evangelizes. And I wonder if submission doesn't get us in trouble in evangelism as well. Think for a minute about what this means for our evangelism. Do we recognize our genuine need for what only God can provide? The greatest evangelist ever, Paul, second to Jesus, I guess, said, I planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the growth. 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 6. But we act like it's all up to us. And consequently, we usually end up just saying, I can't do this because I think it's all up to me. So we got to get over ourselves. Do I discern that only God can give the growth? Am I willing to place this into his hands? What would that do for my prayer life? How would I pray for missions abroad and locally? We're talking about spreading the gospel and you getting involved with that and me being involved with that. Are we humble enough to accept his authority? You know, Jesus preceded the Great Commission with a statement of his authority. Matthew 28:18, all authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. Go therefore and make disciples of all the nations. Will we trust that his ways are better than our ways are? I can't broach this topic with those people, you know, because I've known that person my whole life. And if I start bringing up church now, it's just going to make things weird between us. I can't tell that person this or that or the other. I don't want to rock the boat. I don't want to be perceived as though I'm a stick in the mud. Paul says, I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, because it's the power of God to salvation to anybody who believes, whether they're Jew or Greek, Romans 1, verse 16. Will I trust that his ways are better than mine? Am I willing to confess and forsake self-centeredness and to make it all about Jesus instead? Back to what Paul said in 1 Corinthians 3. He said this in verse 7. Neither he who plants nor he who waters is anything, but only God who gives the growth. If I'm walking with Jesus, I'm going to be acutely aware of my need to submit to God and to yield for the best interest of my fellow man. And part of thinking about my fellow man and what he or she needs will include my willingness to share the gospel with that person. Trusting entirely in him. Not making it about me. I'm a messenger. I'm a clay pot carrying a treasure to someone who desperately needs it. This morning, we invite you to walk with Jesus. Are you walking with him? Sure, we all have areas to improve. In fact, any time we think about Jesus, we're going to be challenged by how great he is and a wonderful example in his perfect sinlessness over against who we are. And yet the goal is to be conformed into the image of his son, Romans chapter 8, verse 29. That is God's son, Jesus. I'm supposed to look more like him, to talk more like him, to think the way that he would. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, Philippians 2, verse 5. And so all of us are in this transformational sanctification process where we're trying to become more like him. But if there's someone in this room who isn't walking with him at all, we invite you to come to know Jesus, and based on your faith in him, turn away from your sinful past. Make it your past and not your present. Confess his sweet name to anybody who will hear you, and die with him in a watery grave of baptism for the forgiveness of sins. If you're ready to do that today, we can help you today. If there's somebody here this morning who needs prayers and encouragement, forgiveness, strength, support, we're here to, in a sense, be the hands and feet of Jesus to make you aware of his love for all of us through each of us toward you. If we can help you, we'd be honored to do it. Come to the front while we stand and sing.